Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Juliana Terrien, who has, with her husband and now on her own, has built one of the largest collections of dealerships in the country for automobiles called Rally Motors. And I'm here to talk with you about that and a lot of other stuff. So tell me, how many dealerships are there altogether?
We have four dealerships. We have Rally BMW, Rally Motors, which is the Mercedes-Benz store. We have Acura, Rally Acura, and Rally Lexus. And our company was Rally Motors for a long time. And then since our Mercedes store is called Rally Motors, we changed the company's name to Rally Motor Company to encompass all of us.
Are you personally a car buff?
Yes, I'm totally a car buff. From when I was 10, my brother and I had contests of make, model, and year of all the cars that would drive by. Now, you know, as you know, they were only American cars, so it wasn't that difficult. Now, once the Datsun and Toyota came in, I stopped that game with my brother.
Me too. Me too. I think I was even earlier than you in doing that. Did you get interested in sports cars at all? Like classics, the old ones from 2013.
Yes, I did. My father taught me how to fix the cars. And so I liked the insides and the outsides. And my uncle had they weren't classics, kind of like junky cars that he was a used cars dealer in California where I grew up. And so we would all drive jalopies from his dealership until they would just go into the grave and then get another one and drive it all the way. But my father was such a buff that he would show me and talk with me all about the old cars. He had a Model A, I think, and with three wheels on it. And so he would take wheels off other cars, he and his brothers, and make, you know, a car that would work. And then he would drive his friends to school in his car and charge them gas. So he was like a really doing that growing up.
What kind of career did your family, your mom and dad, have? Where were you in California?
I was in the San Fernando Valley. I'm an original Valley girl. Oh. My mom was a housewife who then became a nurse when the youngest, I'm fourth out of seven. The youngest went to first grade, then my mom went to nursing school. And then my father was always in aerospace engineering. So he worked for Lockheed, Litton, RCA, all these sort of tech companies. And he was in marketing and sales. So he'd travel around a lot, probably to get away from all of us from time to time.
So what brought you east?
So I was studying architecture and it was like the perfect field for me. But when we started looking at history of architecture, history of art, I didn't know anything about it. I couldn't relate. I was in LA. The oldest building was like the city hall that was maybe 1930 or 1890. And so they would show these pictures of these spires, and I would just fall asleep in this class because it was dark with slides. And so I was like, the only way I'm going to be able to pass and be an architect is if I go over to Europe and look at those things. So I, you know, signed up and applied to go to Europe on this study abroad, and I was chosen. So I went to Florence, and I saw the buildings in real life, and then I really loved it. But before that, I thought, well, why does anybody even have to study this stuff? I'm just, you know, I'm in California and it's fun and there's modern buildings. That was sort of my upbringing, that everything was about today. So then I moved to New York. Right when I graduated, I moved to New York. I went back home, finished and moved to New York.
That's where a lot of architecture is beautiful. A lot of buildings there, Chrysler Building. And
there's a lot of beautiful ones. There's a lot of developer buildings too that aren't so beautiful. It's a shame. But Chicago, I love the architecture in Chicago.
Yeah. So did you work as an architect for a while?
I did. I worked for architects and then I had my own business. And when I met Peter, I was working for a restoration architect. And then over the years, I had my own small business that I did mostly interiors. And I shared an office with another woman architect. And then we would do projects, small projects around the city and in the country. And then when I got pregnant, the sequence was that I married Peter and then I got pregnant. he had cancer. So it wasn't like we just got pregnant, because we had to do the in vitro to get Olivia, because he had already had the surgery for his prostate removal. So we had in vitro, I got pregnant and I said, I don't want to work anymore. I'm pregnant. You're sick. I want to just savor this. I mean, I was 41 when I had gotten pregnant. So I didn't really have to, you know, work and be pregnant and miss out anything. So I really wanted to savor it all. So I gave my practice, this interesting story. I gave my practice to a guy who we worked together before. And I said, can you please take over? So I was thinking that I'd get back to it. And so he did. And I never got back to it, because then Peter subsequently got more and more ill and then died. And then I, you know, went in to run Rally. But the architect who took over my business, he's now the architect of our, not only he did my house in Sag Harbor, but now he's doing the building that we're building, a new Lexus showroom and dealership in Jericho, New York, on Long Island.
When did you first start coming out to Sag Harbor and the rest of the Hamptons?
I moved to New York from LA in 1980. I was modeling at the time for Eileen Ford. So I came out in 1980. I started coming out with friends who could go out for the weekend. I was dating a guy who would bring me out there. And then every summer I would try to find some way that I could go out there for the weekends. And then when Peter and I started going out, we started going out there too. And then I kind of continued to go on. We bought a house after Olivia was born, because he liked to rent houses. There was no reason to buy one. So we would rent them every summer. And then when Olivia came along, I was like, honey, I really want to get a house that could be like our house. Yeah. So that's when we started having a house. And then when he died, that was when I the house was too big. Olivia was in California. She didn't really come out. So I bought a little old house in Sag Harbor and did restoration and renovation on that house. And I love that house so much. It's like my perfect happy place, as they say.
Is you still there?
Still there, yes.
Yeah. What part of, without revealing it, what section of town are you in?
You know, it's in town. It's like, it's off Main Street on Howard, not revealing too much. But yeah. A lot of people don't know that area, and I didn't before.
So you're near Garden Street. Is that the
old? Yes, near Garden, yeah.
Canio and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so sweet and nice. And all the houses are getting sort of fixed up along the way.
What do you have any idea why there were so many little houses built for the whaling industry? I know the mansions are for the captains, but these little are so cute and beautiful.
Well, I don't think that most of the people on those boats were able to live in a fancy house. I think they all were built. I mean, my house was 1830. I don't know very much about the era of a lot of that, the whaling. That's it was even before that.
No, that's in the 1800 to 1849 is when Sag Harbor prospered dramatically and a lot of money came in, and it was a huge town with over 100 whaling ships that sailed out of Long Wharf. It was an amazing situation. And then they all went to San Francisco and to become 49ers because they ran out of whales. And that whole marina district in San Francisco was boats that came from all over the world and just piled in, and people came ashore by going from boat to boat out there. Now it's all buried. It's that whole marina area.
It's all buried?
Yeah, buried. They're underwater.
There must be archives that I could look at to see the Sag Harbor pictures of all those.
Sure, absolutely. Go to the Whaling Museum or into the library, has stuff like that. Anyway, talk a bit about the car dealership. You've dramatically enlarged it, I guess, over time. And tell me about it. We're Lexus people.
Oh, you are? Okay. So, well, Lexus, we were the one of the first Lexus dealers. You know, they came to America. They wanted to have dealerships here. So they went around and everybody threw their hat in the ring who wanted one. And they mostly gave the dealerships to people who had already had a Toyota dealership. And Peter and his partner, George, didn't have a Toyota dealership. They only had Mercedes and BMW at the time. And Rolls Royce and Bentley. They were the same company. So they applied for it. And it was also at the time when Infiniti came out. So both of those cars, you probably remember those commercials, that Infiniti was the actor who had breasts kind of like the guy who invented Apple. And then Lexus showed the car with like the champagne glasses on it. So they applied for both of those cars, but they chose Lexus because it was, the people were like elegant and they just had a better presentation and the car seemed like it would be a better car to represent. Very, very good and consistently good. That was 1990, and it's now 34 years, and we were one of the first ones on Long Island, and John Stalupi also had a dealership on Long Island, a couple other people who were in the business a long time, luxury dealers and Toyota, former Toyota dealers, but they were still, they had Toyota and Lexus, which I wish I had both of those too. Rally started out in Glen Cove on Seacliff Avenue. We had this like warehouse thing. And then Peter and George moved it to Cedar Swamp Road and they built a very nice dealership for all three manufacturers. And then they moved it to Northern Boulevard and had BMW, Mercedes, and Rolls on Northern Boulevard in Roslyn, big place. So they used the old one that was on Cedar Swamp Road for the Rolls Royce, the shop. That Rolls Royces were very temperamental, so they were not very well run. So there was a lot of repairs that had to be done and body shop work that had to be done on the car. So they used that for that. So then when they got Lexus, they were able to move it. We already had a dealership all set up. So we retrofitted the dealership to match the Lexus design on the top. So we put Lexus in there and then moved the shop for Rolls-Royce back to Northern Boulevard. So that was the origins of the Lexus store.
What is the largest of the dealerships and the most cars sold at? Someone told me that Raleigh is probably the largest dealership there is on Long Island.
It's competitively one of the largest that only has luxury. Yeah. And there's a lot of dealerships that have maybe 20 stores. We have 4. They're all luxury. And we're always in the top of, in the nation. We're always in the top in the nation for them. Right now, because we're moving Lexus, we're not in the top 10, but we will be once we move Lexus over to Jericho. So, yeah, we're one of the biggest and the best, I think, too. We have the best customer service, I could say, of any stores on Long Island.
Tell me a little bit.
And that's not just me saying it.
Tell me a little bit what you like to do in the Hamptons and in and around Sag Harbor and Sagaponack.
Well, I got a house in Sag Harbor from which I could walk to everything.
Sure.
So that means a lot to me to be able to walk places because as I get older, I'm going to like that more. And it's getting so crowded as everybody talks about the crowds there. So I can stay in my house and just walk to town and do all the town things. I also, when Peter died, I developed a love for boating. I mean, he and I developed a love for boating together. And then he was too sick to like get onto the boat because he was just getting more and more debilitated. So even to walk onto the boat, and it was so frustrating for me because we had rented this beautiful Hinckley day boat. And it was so pretty and just felt so wonderful to be on it. And he couldn't really climb onto it. So that was the last summer that we rented a boat. So after he passed away, I started with the series of boats that I purchased and went from, you know, the old boat to a little newer boat to a little newer boat. And now I have a boat that I actually bought new. So that's a very good thing. And I keep them in Sag Harbor and Port Washington. Port Washington is near the dealerships. So I can be on my boat in both places. So I can walk to the boat from the house. That means so much to me.
Yeah.
So much fun.
What do you like to do in Sag Harbor? What's your day like?
Because I'm working a lot, I walk around, walk into town. I stay in my house. I stay in the backyard. I cook. I order in. I'm quite a boring Hamptonite. I've decided, and this might not be very popular, that to be involved in a lot of social things, you need to go to everything. So if you're not going to everything, you're not able to go to all the cool things. So I limit myself to art, as I'm very involved in art and collecting and supporting the arts. So when there's art things going on, like that, the beautiful museum that's on 27 that used to be in Southampton, then they moved it. Can't remember the name of it.
The Parish.
No. The Parish Museum is beautiful. I like going there. Driving there is better to do it in, you know, on a Thursday or something or during the week. So I do like the art things that I set up. I haven't done an art show myself, but I've gone to the art museums out there. I like to go to museums. And that also, we went to that bird sanctuary. You walk around where the birds are. That's always nice.
Up in Jessup's Neck, I think.
Yeah, up off of the Noyak Road.
Yeah. That's beautiful right there.
We used to go to Amagansett, boat over there, and then we boat to Montauk. But usually around Sag, I just stay around my house and read and watch TV, watch the Olympics. It's like glued to the TV during the Olympics. Yeah. It's quite boring for other people and just wonderful and enriching for me.
Well, that's. Would you have a favorite restaurant you like to go to?
Well, you know, I like the Ram's Head Inn because we take the boat over there. And oh, so the whole experience of going over, walking down the rickety pass, and then walking up and seeing the kids. Now that they're playing pickleball, not so much bocce ball anymore. And it's just, it's such a nice experience.
Yeah.
The Hampton experiences are nicer than, you know, for me. And just, you know, we go to this restaurant, come home. But to turn it into an experience. And a lot of times the experience will involve a boat.
Do you have a place in the city also? I guess you do.
Yes, I'm there right now. I have an apartment in the city that we raised our daughter in, and we you know, lived here. And then a year before the pandemic, I got a place out on Long Island that was 10 minutes from each dealership. Yeah. Just to see if I would like it, and I loved it. So then now I got a bigger place out there because I'm living there now. So I moved out there, and I come into the city for, you know, doctors and beauty and things like that once a week.
I read
you grew up in the Hamptons, right? Didn't you grow up in Montauk?
I moved there. My dad bought the drugstore in Montauk when I was about 15. And I started the paper when I was in college, when I was come home, did it in the summer in Montauk.
And then, out of your bedroom, you said, because I met you with Vicki Schneps at Pamela Muller's house in Bridgehampton when we had a party for the, and there was that Dan's Papers book, the hardback book that we all got of all the covers.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Dan's Papers over the years. Yeah. So I had met you then, and you gave a nice story about yourself and how you started out. That's so fascinating. So Rally started 2 years before your newspaper.
I see.
Your newspaper was July 1st, 1960, and Rally was 1958.
Yep. You know, I have a memory of when I was growing up, of when I was like in high school, we were about to get our cars, of going out to a dealership that had a Lincoln Continental convertible that was absolutely, it was the first year they made it. It was this boxy but gorgeous, gigantic thing up in New Jersey, because I grew up as a kid in New Jersey. And then we moved out to anyway, I've always been a car buff, so I have something I'd like to talk about. Anyway.
Are you going to the Bridge show in September, I think September 14th?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't miss
the
that.
Car show?
Yeah.
I'll be there. Yeah. We'll, I have it. A car that'll be in it, a 1960 Mercedes.
I have a 59 Triumph TR3. It's a little sports car.
Triumph,
I bought that when it was 5 years old from a guy who owned a bar in Hampton Bays.
Oh, that's so good. You still have it. Did you have a garage then?
Oh, yeah. It's been garaged.
The whole time?
The whole time.
Fantastic. Are you going to have it at the show?
I don't think it can get there. I'm not sure because it tends to overheat after about 6 miles.
Oh. Well, maybe you can flatbed it.
I'll see you there. And I think we've pretty much run out of time. Is there anything else you would like to add or talk about for a couple of minutes?
Well, I guess there's a lot of things about Rally that we didn't talk about, but
sure.
We'll talk about whatever is exciting for you.
Yeah.
I took over Rally in 2002.
Yep.
And, you know, I was just an architect before that. So I didn't really know much about the car business, except being married to Peter. I knew a lot of the people there.
Yeah.
A lot of our friends were staff and employees, the salespeople and the service advisors and things were people I knew. So it was sort of like already my family.
Yeah.
So I had asked everybody, you know, my door's open. You come in we'll learn together. And I want to keep this. I don't want to sell it. They were encouraging me to sell it. One of the manufacturers said, the interesting story, he said, he took me out to lunch and he said, don't you want to stay home with your daughter? And I was shocked in 2002 that somebody felt brave enough to say something like that to me. But he was the only one of all the manufacturers who wasn't really in my corner.
Yeah.
The other ones really were, and they supported me. And, you know, it's rather a sexist industry, but architecture was pretty male dominated also. So it was normal for me to be in that male dominated world anyway. In college, there weren't that many women in architecture. We had 5 women in the whole program. Yeah. So I was used to it. So what I like to say to women is that become really good at what you do, because you have to be better than everybody else for them not to like pick apart things. And then you need to just roll with the punches. So if you're confident, you can roll with the punches and just allow people to be themselves. That's what's worked for me. You know, you don't want to be a hard nose.
Well, you've made a success into a greater success, and that's an accomplishment.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's doubled itself in size since my husband passed away. So that's pretty good.
Yes. Well, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Dan.
I'm going to try and put it up we'll put it up at the time we're going to do the thing at the bridge in September. That would be
okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay. Terrific.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, I'll see you at the bridge.
You will. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.